Welcome to episode 5 of the Man of Starch podcast for Monday, August 4th, 2008. Your source for the polite musings of a real-life high school English teacher and drama coach from beautiful Mariposa, California. In this week's podcast, we are featuring pod-safe ska music from CCA, Big D and the Kids Table, and High Standard, a roundup of the top news stories in education and how they will affect you, a review of what Man of Starch has been reading and watching, including the nonfiction book Jim of the Prairie and the Sacramento Music Circus production of Sweeney Todd in the Round, highlights from this week in history, a calendar of events for all those Central Valley kids complaining that there is nothing to do in this town, the cool techie toy of the week. We will be looking at the origins of the term ska in our segment Etymology for a Semi-Literate World, and we'll close out on a lighter note with highlights from our small town Sheriff's Daily Log. But let's get started with our first song for this all-ska show. Here's a happy little number we picked up at Jamendo.com entitled Myself by Big D and the Kids Table. That was Myself by Big D and the Kids Table. As summer winds down and the thought of a stressful school year approaches, I figured I'd use up some of the pod-safe ska songs I downloaded from Jamendo, try to pump a bit of life into the end of our summer vacation. 2 weeks from today, Man of Starch goes back to work. I apologize that there was no podcast last week. You may have seen on the national news something called the Telegraph Fires outside of Yosemite National Park. We were coming home, my wife and I, from San Francisco on Saturday night after going to a Giants game. And as we were driving into town in our convertible, we had the top down, and we could see in the distance that over Mariposa, it looked like a big purple storm was brewing. As we pulled into town, ash was falling into our car like large snowflakes, and we pulled up and there were CHP everywhere, roads were closed off, and we found out that her parents had actually been evacuated. A fire had been started by some people who were target practicing down in the valley of the River Canyon. And the fire threatened us for about 3 or 4 days. We were on pre-evac notice, had our cars all loaded up, and I had my iPod loaded up in the car for 2 days of that. Did not get a chance to update the podcast until now. A bunch of homes were lost. Luckily, we were safe, and so was my mother-in-law and father-in-law. But I do have some good friends who did lose their homes, and I just want them to know that they are in our thoughts. And now, the news in education. California school districts ending or reducing bus service for students, the headline reads. Thousands more California students will have to find their own way to school this fall as districts slash bus routes to cope with budget shortfalls and high fuel costs. Critics worry that the cuts will increase traffic around schools, shift costs to parents already struggling with rising gas prices, and prompt more absenteeism, hurting students' academic achievement. But paramount is the fear that the reductions will endanger students as more walk or drive to school. All the parents we've been scrambling to try to work out carpools, said Wayne Tate, whose second graders bus to Castile Elementary, 2 miles from their home in Mission Viejo, was eliminated. For somebody that young, that's a pretty long way to walk or ride a bike. All you need is one kid getting hurt to realize that maybe the savings wasn't worth it. Districts say they have no choice. It's a horribly difficult decision, said Larry Brown, assistant superintendent of business services at Moorpark Unified School District in Ventura County, which is eliminating bus rides for its 2,400 high school students, a decision no one wants to make. Unlike most other states, California does not require districts to provide home-to-school transportation except in limited circumstances. Fewer than 15% of the state's 6.3 million students ride school buses, according to a 2007 report by the State Auditor's Office. Los Angeles Unified is among districts that do not offer the service for most students. A year's worth of bus service costs an average of nearly $1,400 per student in urban districts and more than $900 per rural pupil, according to the State Auditor's report. The state provides less than half of the $1.1 billion that districts spend annually on transportation. To make up the rest, districts dip into their general fund, the same pot of money that pays for smaller class sizes, teacher salaries, and textbooks. Many districts also require parents to buy bus passes that can cost hundreds of dollars annually per child. This is probably the number one budget issue here in Mariposa County. We don't have the option of getting rid of buses. I have students who come an hour to an hour and a half each way every day, waking up around 4:30 in the morning. And then if they stay for drama rehearsal, they get home, or football practice, and they get home at maybe 7 p.m. I can't imagine spending that much of my life on a bus, especially on the twisty roads up here. But I can't imagine also having a second grader walk 2 miles to school. High school students, okay, maybe, but getting rid of buses in L.A. and Ventura and places that have a lot of traffic, it's going to affect a lot of parents, and hopefully somewhere we can find the money in the budget. But it looks like, for the time being, a lot of these districts are just going to cut the buses completely. And our second story for the week is called Literacy Debate Online. Are you really reading? And are you, as in the letters. A passionate debate about just what it means to read in the digital age. The discussion is playing out among educational policymakers and reading experts around the world, and within groups like the National Council of Teachers of English and the International Reading Association. As teenagers' scores on standardized reading tests have declined or stagnated, some argue that the hours spent prowling the internet are the enemy of reading, diminishing literacy, wrecking attention spans, and destroying a precious common culture that exists only through the reading of books. But others say the internet has created a new kind of reading, one that schools and society should not discount. The web inspires teenagers who might otherwise spend most of their leisure time watching television to read and write. Even accomplished book readers crave the ability to quickly find different points of view on a subject and converse with others online. Some children with dyslexia or other learning difficulties have found it far more comfortable to search and read online. At least since the invention of television, critics have warned that electronic media would destroy reading. What is different now, some literacy experts say, is that spending time on the web, whether it is looking up something on Google or even BritneySpears.org, entails some engagement with text. Some web evangelists say children should be evaluated for their proficiency on the internet, just as they are tested on their print reading comprehension. Starting next year, some countries will participate in new international assessments of digital literacy, but the United States, for now, will not. Clearly, reading in print and on the internet are different. On paper, text has a predetermined beginning, middle, and end, where readers focus for a sustained period on one author's vision. On the internet, readers skate through cyberspace at will and, in effect, compose their own beginnings, middles, and ends. And the article goes on from there. I don't think there's any easy answer to this. Obviously, you need some higher thinking skills when you are using the internet. I feel just mentally exhausted sometimes when I've got 5 or 6 browsers open. I've got my iTunes going. I've got Audacity going. I'm using my DVD decryptor over on one side. I have 2 external hard drives plugged in, and I'm going through different files. You definitely are thinking at a much higher level, but at the same time, I know that I don't always comprehend or maybe let things sink in like I do when I'm just sitting still and reading a book. More and more I find that I almost have to multitask or I get bored. If I'm watching a movie, my wife probably has a laptop, I might be flipping through a magazine at the same time playing with the iPod. I don't know what the answer is, and I wonder if it's not going to affect us in the long run. One thing that I've gotten in the habit of doing, and I don't know if it's a bad thing to do, is I've got my iPod on every night when I go to sleep. And it only lasts for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'm out, but the show continues to play for the next 45, 50 minutes, whatever podcast I'm listening to. And I wonder if that's affecting my sleep or not. I guess time will tell. And now, Man of Starch Reviews, where I tell you what I've been reading and watching. The book that I've been working on this week is called The Jim of the Prairie by Herbert Asbury. I've read one book by him before, and I think I'll continue on with the series. Herbert Asbury was born in 1889, died in 1963. He was an American journalist and writer who is best known for his true crime books detailing crime during the 19th and early 20th century, such as Jim of the Prairie, which is about Chicago, Barbary Coast, an informal history of the San Francisco underworld, and the most famous, The Gangs of New York. The Gangs of New York was later adapted for film as Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York. However, the film adaptation of Gangs of New York was so loose that Gangs was nominated for Best Original Screenplay rather than as a screenplay adapted from another work. In earlier decades, Asbury was known for his self-described informal histories, which included descriptions of various cities focusing on violence, crime, prostitution, and lurid events. And his books cover Chicago, San Francisco, New Orleans, New York, gambling, and the oil fields. I wouldn't say that there's any story necessarily to them. You watch Gangs of New York and it really follows one storyline. His books will go on and on and on about single characters. You maybe have a new character every 2 to 3 pages. He'll tell you a little anecdote about them and it jumps to the next one. It's very violent for the fact that the one I'm reading was written in 1940, but at the same time it's telling you how cities got started and really reminds me a lot of Deadwood. So if you're into the series Deadwood, each of his books tells you about the very violent past of these cities that have now become world-class cities here in the United States. I also got away last weekend. As I said earlier in the podcast, I was in San Francisco. Before that I was in Sacramento seeing the production of Sweeney Todd in The Round. And I've seen very few plays produced in The Round, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's kind of like the audience sits all the way around the stage, and so that forces the actors to have microphones and also to think about where their bodies are positioned, and so at one point you may be watching the back of an actor, and the next he may be facing you. And in The Round, it had 4 different entrances that the actors would come in and out of, because there's nowhere for the actors to go except down the aisles of the theater. And so those 4 different entrances also represented the judge's balcony, the barber shop, the oven was right next to us. Unfortunately, we couldn't see into the oven. They'd open the doors and you'd see all the smoke come out. And the court, with the pie shop in the middle, and most of the action happening down there in the pie shop. We were directly across from the barber shop, which was good because we could see what was happening up there. Some of the people who were sitting right in that aisle were kind of having to look up and maybe did not see the murders taking place up there. It was a fairly good adaptation, I thought. The big problem for my wife and I are we love the 1982 London version with Angela Lansbury playing Mrs. Lovett, and no matter how many Mrs. Lovetts we see either on film or live, no one seems to really live up to Angela Lansbury playing Mrs. Lovett. And I was hoping to have some recommendations of things to watch. I have been watching a lot of different television series and some movies, and unfortunately I just can't really recommend anything. I've seen some pretty awful movies lately, and some that we've turned off in the first 15 minutes. I did want to turn you on to a site, though, sjvls.org. sjvls.org. That stands for San Joaquin Valley Library System. And even if you don't live in the Central Valley of California, you probably have a library system like this around your area. And this is the Valley Cat, the Valley Catalog for Bakersfield, Fresno, Merced, Mariposa, Tulare, and Kings Canyon. And I've kind of played with this before. Our library only has so many books, and when I was a kid, you'd go in and you just had your pick of whatever was there. But on the Valley Cat, you can search for a book and have it shipped to you from any of these other libraries. Some of the libraries charge like $1 per book. Our library doesn't charge. The thing that I discovered in the last week or so is that you can also ask for series of different television series. And so last summer, my wife and I spent a lot of money renting a disc at a time of Six Feet Under. And then I went on the Valley Cat and realized that they had all 5 seasons of 6 Feet Under, and you can keep them for up to 3 weeks. You might have to wait for a week or two for them to get there, but once they're there, they're yours and they're free. So check out the Valley Cat or your local area library system, and check out the movies that you can rent for free if you're looking at getting into some of those series out there, or even they've got a lot of just regular films. We recently couldn't get Hellboy on Netflix because everybody's renting Hellboy now since the second one came out. I walked right into the library and Hellboy was sitting right there on the shelf. So check that out. I usually only have songs at the beginning and the end of the podcast, but I had a short little ska song I wanted to throw here in the middle for you. This is a song called This Is Love by High Standard. Don't you know you are my angel? On my knees I fall for you. Can I say this is love? Embracing your warmest softness, deep inside we are one. Can I say this is love? Why don't we just get nothing better? There's no end for it together. This is love. Hand in hand we enjoy it and grow up together. Now, this week in history. August 4th, 1944, Anne Frank was captured. August 5th, 1962, Marilyn Monroe was found dead. August 6th, 1945, the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. August 7th, 1782, George Washington introduced the Order of the Purple Heart. August 8th, 1974, Nixon resigned. August 9th, 1936, Jesse Owens won his 4th gold medal at the Olympics. On August 10th, 1846, Smithsonian Institution was created. And speaking of Anne Frank, The Diary of Anne Frank is a stage adaptation of the book The Diary of a Young Girl. The play is a dramatization of Frances Goodrich and Albert Hackett. It opened at the Court Theatre Broadway on October 5th, 1955. The play received the Tony Award for Best Play, and the play also received the Pulitzer Prize for Drama. It was on my reading list this summer, and I was kind of hesitant to read it because I know I'd read the book as a kid, and I kind of associated it as a kid's book, even though it deals with very adult issues. And I was amazed at how the play really kept me on the edge of my seat, and something I'd like to see produced at some point. So I highly recommend the play, The Diary of Anne Frank. And now our calendar of events for all those Northern California and Central California kids wondering, is there anything to do in this town? And I'd like to tell you about the next show coming up at the Music Circus. There's a couple of shows between now and then, but this one you should be able to still get tickets for. August 19th through 28th at the Wells Fargo Pavilion in Sacramento, California. Hairspray, the Tony Award-winning Best Musical of 2003, closes the season with its Music Circus premiere. The musical comedy phenomenon takes you back to 1962 Baltimore as 16-year-old Tracy Turnblad sets out to dance her way onto TV's most popular show. Can a big girl with big dreams and even bigger hair integrate the Corny Collins show and still win the love of the show's teen heartthrob? Hairspray is piled bouffant high with laughter and romance and enough deliriously tuneful songs to fill a nonstop platter party. The season will close with an extended 12 performances run of Hairspray. Paul Vogt, who starred on the role on Broadway, in Las Vegas, and Boston, will play Edna Turnblad. Vogt's sharp comedic timing is best known for his multiple seasons on Mad TV. And so it's a good chance to see a Broadway performer actually play in the same role that he made famous on Broadway here in Sacramento. And so the website is www.californiamusicaltheater.com, and theater is spelled R-E as opposed to E-R. And tickets, last I looked, were between $41 and $53. And as I've said, with theater in the round, every seat is a good seat. If you're looking for music out there, the Burlingame Jazz Festival, 16th Annual Burlingame Art and Jazz Festival, presented by Burlingame Chamber of Commerce, features over 150 artists, fine art sculptures, ceramics, crafts, jewelry, specialty clothing, delicious gourmet foods, a home and garden area, and a thoroughly entertaining children's play area. The festival showcases many forms of light jazz, such as Dixieland, swing, and Latin. It's a wonderful way to spend a summer day with a family. Locations: Burlingame Avenue, located in the heart of the village-like downtown area of Burlingame, 15 minutes south of San Francisco in San Mateo County. Take Caltrain to the Burlingame train station, which is just steps away from the festival. Parking is also available. It runs through August 10th, and the time is 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you're interested, burlingamechamber.org or call 650-344-1735. I wanted to give you one more affordable theater option out there, especially if you're in San Francisco or can get to a BART station. And that's the cool thing about the Bay Area, even the Central Valley. You're never too far away from a BART station, and you may have to sit on the train for an hour, but for $6 you can get down to the heart of the city and leave your car behind. BATS Improv, B-A-T-S Improv, has headlined the Bay Area's innovative improv theater scene for 20 years. Each and every weekend, we present a series of completely improvised shows in a variety of formats, from theater sports to improvised musicals and everything in between. Join us for a show and see why critics call BATS Bounce in Your Seat Funny and San Francisco's premier improvisational theater. It's at improv.org, and tickets are $12 to $15. I took a group of students there a couple of years ago for a show at night, and it was very funny. We had a great time. I'd say it even rivals the Groundlings, the famous company from Los Angeles where a lot of people got their start. And if you're going to go there, right next door is the Greens Restaurant, and that's greensrestaurant.com. This is located at Fort Mason. There's a great hostel there as well if you want to go for the night. Greens Restaurant was a pioneer in establishing vegetarian cuisine in the United States. In the 60s and 70s, vegetarian restaurants were mostly small, out-of-the-way cafes. There is no high-profile vegetarian restaurant in the United States. Greens changed that by raising the bar by placing vegetarian cuisine on a level with other fine dining restaurants. We've been reviewed by food and design magazines from the time we opened. Today we are surprised if a good restaurant does not have vegetarian options. Greens helped pave the way for this acceptance. And I've been to Greens Restaurant as well. We made a night of it. Went to the Greens Restaurant and then went to the improv show around 7:30 or 8 at night. It's not a cheap place for dinner. It's fairly expensive, but at the same time you're going to be introduced some world-class food and dishes that you may not have thought to have tried. And hopefully, if you're not vegetarian — I had a lot of people on the trip who were not vegetarian, and it gave them a different outlook on vegetarian food, and saw that it could have a lot of flavor and a lot of interesting textures without having to be boring and without having to have meat included. Usually I have a cool techie site of the week. This week I'm going to talk about a cool techie toy that I purchased in the last week or so. It's gotten some mixed reviews, but so far I've been happy with it. iOmega makes it. It's called a Screenplay. Enjoy the convenience of watching digital files on your home theater or TV without being connected to the computer with the iOmega Screenplay. This one's a 500 gigabyte multimedia drive. It's a cost-effective, high-quality multimedia player plus high-capacity storage for your media collections of photos, videos, and music files in a compact, sleek, black style to complement your home theater system. The Screenplay multimedia drive is compatible with the latest media formats such as MP3, AC3, WAV, MPEG-1, MPEG-2, including AVI and VOB files, and MPEG-4, as well as JPEGs. And so far, I've been happy with it because I've been using it for, and I believe they're pronounced VOB files. I don't know if it's VOB or VOB files. But when I use a program called DVD Decryptor, which you can, from what I understand, legally use for your own DVDs, it puts it into chapters and it loads right onto the Screenplay. You just plug it in like you would any exterior drive. And I'll make a file for something, like say I was going to watch Sweeney Todd, and I could decrypt Sweeney Todd into chapters and then load it up onto the Screenplay. And then in the back, it's got a couple of plugins for your typical RCA cords, your red, white, and yellow cords, and they plug right into the television. You've got a little remote, and you can watch your DVDs on it. Now you're wondering, well, why not just pop a DVD into the player? The cool thing is this can hold about 100 DVDs, and it's no bigger than maybe a book, and so I can take it on vacation with me and have all of my DVDs loaded onto it and watch it. I have had problems, obviously, with taking things from iTunes and trying to watch them on the screenplay. And every time you try to change format, it's going to change the quality of your video. And so that's one problem I could see people having. If they want to take all of their stuff on iTunes and load it on, it's not going to work. But you're going to have that problem with a lot of things from iTunes, or unless you have all of your audio files already converted into an MP3 format. I've had problems with video casts with not just the screenplay, but with my iPod, because so many video podcasts out there are not in a single format, and they won't play on your iPod. They'll only play on your computer. So I'm sure there are bugs to work out, but if you're simply using something like DVD Decryptor and getting your DVDs converted into VOB files, it's a great way to store your DVDs and watch them on the go. The screenplay is a little pricey, as new technology usually is. It's basically an external hard drive that you can plug into your television, as long as things are in the correct format. It runs on Amazon around $180, some days down to $160. I shopped around and found mine for $150. You can also buy one with a larger hard drive, I think a 1 terabyte, if you want to really go all out. And now etymology for a semi-literate world. Since we're featuring ska music, I figured I'd look up ska, and I found a little bit of information, but not really as much as I was hoping for. Balderdash and Piffle on BBC Two Tonight investigated the origin of the word ska. Four theories were explored. Number one, the sound of a guitar note, like sk. Number two, from scat, as in scat singing, where like Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong would sing with their voice and replicate different instruments. Number three, ska vuvi, apparently a word of greeting used by a certain Jamaican DJ of the period. And the fourth was from the word scatter, and scatter was a friend of the musician Prince Buster. The earliest recorded reference to the word was said to be in March 1964 in an article in the Daily Gleaner by Maureen Cleave, who is a journalist on the London Evening News and who probably wrote the piece for that paper before it appeared in the Gleaner. There is a 45 out there by Sugar and Dandy released in 1964 called Let's Ska. So the word probably goes back to at least 1964, if not earlier. And now it's time for highlights from our Sheriff's Daily Log. We don't have a lot of information to report because they've been a little slow getting it posted up on the internet this week since we have had the fire, but I've got a few highlights. Missing black cow on East Whitlock Road. We had a lot of livestock loose this week because of the Telegraph fire. There's an aggressive dog on Highway 49. A lost yellow chihuahua on 140 in Mid-Pines. A noise complaint on Ponderosa Way. A suspicious vehicle on Paddy Hill. And a loose donkey on Gros Jean and 140. And that road actually connects to where Man of Starch lives, and I believe this may have been the same loose donkey that we tried to capture ourselves. There was a loose donkey wandering around for about a day. It scared our cat up to a tree, and I'm sure our cat had it coming. He probably went over and messed with the donkey. Our neighbor tried to attract the donkey with a banana, but the donkey was not interested. So my neighbor ate the banana and left the donkey alone. And my wife went out to try to get the donkey to come over to her. She brought out an apple, and it immediately walked over, but she could not get the rope around the donkey's neck. So we left a bucket of water out, let the donkey be, and called animal control, and eventually, I guess someone found the donkey. They called the sheriff, and luckily the donkey is now famous because he made it into the Sheriff's Daily Log and onto the Man of Starch podcast. So what have we learned this week? Someday you too may be able to complain to your grandchildren about walking to school in the snow 2 miles uphill both ways. Reading on the internet may actually make your test scores slip, but the jury is still out on whether or not listening to the Man of Starch podcast makes you smarter. Libraries, they're not just for books anymore. Give veggies a chance and check out an all-vegetarian restaurant sometime soon. iOmega Screenplay makes up to 100 of your favorite movies portable. We may not know where the word ska comes from, but we know it makes us happy. And finally, donkeys are not big fans of bananas, even though they may just be the world's most perfect fruit. That's all the time we have this week for the Man of Starch podcast. The Man of Starch is leaving for a week to Indianapolis and Chicago, and so next week's podcast may be a little bit late. I'm going to try to report from the road. I will be seeing the Broadway tour of Wicked, so I'll be sure to have a report on that whenever I get back to my computer. We're going to leave you with another ska song we picked up over at Jamindo.com, a band called CCA with their tune Runaway. Until next time, this is the Man of Starch, signing off.
Keep the tape rolling as she blocks out the truth. When the motion picture collapses, passes her by.